What's behind the rise in so-called bandit attacks in northern Nigeria? Gunmen kill at least 200 people, reportedly in retaliation for government airstrikes. Can anything stop the cycle of violence? This is Inside Story. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Mohammed Jamjoum. Armed groups have terrorized people in central and northwestern Nigeria for years. The so-called bandits burn down villages, steal cattle, and kidnap people for ransom. Attacks are on the rise, and the government appears to be struggling to stop them. At least 200 people were killed in Zamfara State last Tuesday. Witnesses say gunmen on motorbikes attacked 8 villages. The assault appears to be retaliation for military airstrikes a day earlier on the bandits' hideouts in nearby forests. Separately, security forces in Zamfara rescued nearly 100 hostages abducted 3 months ago. The police chief says the operation involved airstrikes. And in Kebbi State, further west, 30 students were freed after 7 months. It's unclear whether ransoms were paid. The violence is rooted in a conflict for land and water between nomadic cattle herders and farmers who come from different ethnic groups. But criminal gangs have become more involved in the past few years. They have extorted millions of dollars from kidnappings. Some security analysts call it the most lucrative industry in Nigeria. The president has labeled the gangs terrorist organizations. This allows the military to deploy more force. And the government can seek international support to fight the armed groups. All right, let's bring in our guests in Abuja. Mike Ejiofor, former director of Nigeria's State Security Service. In London, Bulama Bukarti, senior analyst at the Tony Blair Institute for Global Change. And in Coventry, Aliyu Musa, independent researcher focusing on war and conflict in Nigeria. A warm welcome to you all, and thanks for joining us on Inside Story today. Bulama, let me start with you. Were these attacks by armed bandits in Zamfara State in response to the airstrikes that were conducted last week by the military against armed bandits?
I mean, that's what the military says, and Nigeria's president calls it a desperate attack. But this is the line from government whenever we see attacks like this. This has been the narrative for over 5 years. But if you say these were desperate people who were under a serious military attack, they marched into 5 different villages and operated for 48 hours. I would think if they were desperate, they should be throwing out their weapons and hiding themselves, not marching into villages and killing 200 people. And we know that this killing of 200 people is a big number, but the statistics show that at least 50 people are killed in the northwestern part of Nigeria every single week. And this has been the case over the past 12, 15 months. Last year alone in 2021, 10,500 Nigerians were killed, and over 50% of them were killed in the Northwest. And 4,500 Nigerians, that is 4,500 people, were kidnapped. Some of them have been released after they have paid ransom. Others have been killed, and some are still in custody. Even colleagues of the 30 students you said on the top that were released yesterday, 18 students, consisting of 15 girls and 3 boys, and are still in custody, and they have been in custody for 7 long months now. So I don't think it is a desperate attack. It is not a retaliatory attack, because they were not attacked by villagers in any case. They were attacked by military jets. And so if there were attacks on villages, then these are horrific terroristic attacks on innocent Nigerians that we should not tag retaliatory or desperate.
Mike, the term bandit is used often to describe these armed groups and their members. But I'm wondering if that term is too simple, if that term belies how sophisticated these criminal gangs are, how powerful they have become. I wonder if you could dissect for our audience who exactly are these bandits. I mean, who makes up these groups and how did they emerge?
Well, you see, the issue in the Northwest, you see, they started as, we classify them, call them bandits, because they're involved in criminalities. But it became worrisome that they got to the point of doing mass kidnap of school children, abduction, raping of women, and the government had to take further steps, you know, based on the clamor from the people to at least designate them as terrorists, which is what they are, because they have so much created fear in the people that economic activities have been ground to a halt. People are no longer safe. They don't move freely. So I think it's a right step in the right direction that government designate them as terrorists. And having done that, I think the government is now on the offensive. You recall that it was not easy to deploy the Tucanos acquired because of the Lee law in the U.S., which prohibits the sale of arms to Nigeria because of alleged human rights abuse. But now that they've been designated as terrorists, they'll be treated as terrorists. I think that's what government is doing now. Based on intelligence, their locations are found out, and the Air Force will go after them to bombard the areas and possibly flush them out. Mm-hmm. And I think that is responsible for the recent attacks. Now, I want to say it's retaliatory, you know, because they are being pounded and pushed out from their host. They are now going after innocent civilians.
Aliyu, you heard Mike there talk about the fact that it was just last week that the government has designated officially these armed groups, these bandits, as terrorists. So the government says that this is going to enable them to go after these groups in a more efficient manner, to go after the groups, to go after their sympathizers. Do you think that's the case? Do you think this designation of these groups, these bandits, as terrorists will actually improve the situation?
Well, I think calling them terrorists is something that is actually belated. From day one, these guys were terrorists. The government shouldn't have waited this long to call them what they are. They have always been terrorists. And let me add to what my colleague Mike just said about them. What we need to understand about this group of criminals is that we need to understand that there are three categories of criminals. First of all, they are bandits who are political criminals. Political criminals in the sense that many of them have nothing really to do with farmers' headers' crisis. They were thugs that are being used by politicians and now being dumped or further being used as proxies. This has been confirmed by even the governor of the state, who is presently helpless and is saying it, that yes, there are strong politicians who are using them. Mm-hmm. Imagine one of the criminals, Tuji, he's there, he's causing a lot of mayhem in the state, but he can't be arrested. Mm-hmm. He is responsible for the killings of over 200 people in a bus. On the bus, they were burned, but he can't be arrested. This is one set of the criminals. Another set of the criminals is a group of the headers. Now, these are people that originally had problems with the farmers. So you can understand that that's part of the problem started between from a clash between the farmers and the headers. And because there was no government intervention at the beginning, mm-hmm. that continued onto where we are today. Then there is also a movement of criminals from the Northeast who originally were Boko Haram terrorists, and they moved on from the Northeast down to the Northwest because the government's strategy of dealing with the terrorists mm-hmm. in the Northwest was not properly fail-safe. Fail-safe in the sense that whereas when you are fighting criminals, you have to deal with it in such a way that when you disperse them, you don't let them, I mean, when you fight them, you don't let them disperse.
Ali, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me get back to you in just a moment on that point that you're making right now. I do have a question about that. First, I want to go to Bulama because, Bulama, you heard Aliyu there talk about some of the historical roots of the conflict that we're seeing play out in northwestern Nigeria. This violence seems to be rooted in conflict for land and water between nomadic cattle herders and farmers. And I want to ask you more about that. If you could walk our viewers through a bit of the history of this conflict and how it's playing out, and if you think it's only going to be worsening, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, so the conflict originally started as a farmer herder crisis and cattle rustling. And that is because there was this competition over scarce water and land resources in the northwestern part of Nigeria, but also across the country. I remember growing up in the northeast, we have always seen these conflicts rearing their heads whenever it is rainy season, where you have farmers and herders fighting. But then, like Aliyu said, in the course of time, then criminals inserted themselves into the field, and they took over almost the whole crisis in the northwest, especially in the last 10 years or so. And what we saw was this growing business of kidnapping for ransom. And as you said on the top, it is the most lucrative industry in Nigeria today. It is the biggest business, giving the largest amount of profit you can think of. Now, then, of course, there was infiltration by Boko Haram fighters, but that's a very little portion of what we are talking about. What we are talking about in the Northwest today are an estimated 30,000 criminals divided into over 100 gangs. And what they do is to kidnap people, burn down villages. And I completely agree with Aliyu that their designation is long overdue. They should have been designated long ago. But even now that they have been designated, except the government takes steps and treats them like terrorists, just declaring them terrorists won't solve the problem. They have got to be treated and be fought like terrorists are being fought in other parts of Nigeria.
Mike, are these bandits, are these armed groups in any way linked to Boko Haram, or has Boko Haram infiltrated them in any way?
Well, it cannot be fully established, but like the other of my colleagues said, you know, when they disperse from the northeast, the tendency for them is to move to the northwest, which increased the tempo, although it's not been established, but I believe that in addition to the original bandits within the northwest, especially Zamfara State, for instance, they now have more support and they are now encouraged because of the ransom being paid by victims. And it helps them more to accumulate more money to buy weapons. Like you said in your intro, you see, millions of dollars and millions of naira are paid to these bandits. So there's a possibility that those of them from the northeast has increased the strength of them in the northwest. But with this new onslaught, having been designated terrorists, I think the government will go out and fish them out and possibly restore normalcy in that area.
Aliyu, you were speaking a moment ago about different criminal elements and how the government is combating them. I also want to ask you a little bit about Boko Haram. In combating Boko Haram, in going after Boko Haram, has the government essentially dropped the ball when it comes to going after other criminal gangs or other bandits in different parts of the country?
Well, I don't think really so much has been done, particularly in the case of this criminal in the northeast, in the northwest, particularly if you look at what is happening right now in Zamfara State, like I mentioned, I have mentioned the case of Turuji, who is a criminal there, and like my colleague Bulama has mentioned, we have a lot of criminals there. The most lucrative business today in Nigeria is kidnapping for ransom. You can imagine people negotiating with criminals every day. Criminals asking for millions of naira to release human beings. And the government is watching. In Zamfara State alone, they impose taxes on villagers, people who haven't got money. Somebody will have to go out and go and look for money in the city to come and pay criminals, but government is watching there. So what I'm saying is the government's calling them terrorists would not change anything unless they change their strategy of handling these criminals. Yeah, the military can't just go there and bomb them from the air and then without really putting down ground soldiers to make sure that the whole place is tightened. You have to seal the whole place and stop them from getting out.
Bulama,
so, because what is happening...
Go ahead, Aliyu, sorry.
Yeah, what is happening is that when you bomb the place and you let them get out, you are endangering the villagers more because you are letting them go to come back and attack the villages, and then you call that desperate retaliation. No, that shouldn't be happening.
Bulama, let me ask you to pick up on a point that Aliyu was making there. You know, it's been reported that in recent weeks, the Nigerian military has increased airstrikes on forest hideouts in parts of Zamfara. Is there any evidence that they have been effective?
I mean, it is true that the Nigerian military has increased or escalated airstrikes, but we also know that these criminals have over the years mastered the art of evading airstrikes. The Nigerian military has been airstriking Boko Haram for over 6 years now, in fact, about 8 years now, but Boko Haram is still wreaking havoc in the northeastern part of Nigeria. And in the northwest, we have seen military airstrikes. For example, in the first quarter of last year, that's 2021, in Kaduna State, the Nigerian military ran airstrike for 3 months. And in their own report, in the government's report, they said in the 3 months they did airstrike for, they killed only 67 criminals, 67 of 30,000 criminals. We know that they are masters of evading airstrikes, and the military would come and rain bombs and then leave the area only for them to get out of the jungles and attack innocent Nigerians. And the fact that the military withdraws after those airstrikes, just like we have seen in this attack we are talking about where over 200 people were killed, you know that it is ineffective. You have got to get on the ground and operation, but also there is need for a better cooperation between Nigeria and Niger Republic. Because we know that when there are onslaughts, major military onslaughts, the criminals have found a way of fleeing Nigeria's territory into Niger Republic, only for them to return to Nigeria after the military has finished wasting its resources. And so it is not effective, and the last few years are clear that it hasn't been effective.
Mike, from your vantage point as the former director of Nigeria's State Security Service, let me ask you, do you believe that the scope of the military operations as they are playing out now are too narrow and that in order for them to be effective going forward, they really need to widen them out and cover more territory, especially forest territory, where these bandits and these armed groups may be hiding out?
Yeah, I think it's going to yield results because, first of all, you see, having been designated terrorists, we have to change tactical approach to these bandits. Like I said earlier, normally there must be collateral damage, but with intensified intelligence, I think their exact locations will be spotted and on their way out, coming out for attack, because that is the problem. The question has been, where our security agencies, when these people are coming out, until they attack and they retreat, you begin to pursue them, it becomes very difficult for you to carry out any attack on them while they're with their hostages. So with this new offensive, that their exact locations, where they're coming, they're bombed. But the fear, again, is that they will take it against the civilian populace. But this war is a war that must be won. The government must take the initiative from these bandits and restore normalcy in that area. I think that's the position.
Aliyu, how do these various types of attacks and the types of kidnappings that have been going on, how have they impacted schools and students in different communities? And how have these attacks impacted trade routes as well?
Well, like we know, right from the days of Boko Haram up until now, schools have been the targets. We know schools have been attacked in the past, and we know how much schools presently are being attacked, students kidnapped. As we speak now, there are students of a Baptist school in Kaduna that have been in captivity for probably 3 months to 4 months or so. There were schools of an Islamic school, which is, they are just like kindergartens that were taken away, and they were in captivity for more than 3 months. Nobody could even pay the ransom and get them out. They were there for several months. Some of them died. There are students of one higher institution, I can't remember the name, that were kidnapped, and then they were there. They are still there as we speak. So it is a major problem. When you send your children to school, you get worried what is going to happen to them. They get killed or they get kidnapped. A number of students of universities on their way to university or on their way to school university trips, kind of school trips, they get waylaid by these criminals and taken away. A number of times, bombs go off and they get killed and so on. We remember the Chibok story and the Dapchi story, what happened in the case of Boko Haram, then just kidnappers today. So what I find very difficult to understand is why these criminals are doing this by attacking schools. But then when you look at it, Boko Haram really succeeded. For a number of years, Boko Haram was trying to inscribe its name on the world map. It couldn't succeed even after bombing the UN building. But then it succeeded easily by getting into Chibok. So school, by attacking school, by making schools and students victims, I think they can easily draw international attention. So school, it's very easy to understand why schools can be affected. And in terms of trade, the economy, not has been affected significantly. Businesses have been crippled, particularly the farmers. They cannot harvest. Most of the time, they will have to pay taxes imposed on them. When they cannot, if they are unable to pay those taxes, it means the whole of the crops that have been that are due for harvesting, they get wasted. And that means there is no crops for the next season to be sold. And a lot of money is wasted. And then business routes are blocked completely, because when you are on the way, you try to travel, you end up in their hands. And these are massless people. So, yeah, these are things that are happening.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you again. We are starting to run out of time. Bulama, my last question to you. I want to talk for a moment about the survivors of these attacks, the most recent attack in Zamfara and previous attacks as well. Do we know how many people have been left homeless? Are they able to receive the necessary help and aid that they need? I mean, just how traumatized are these populations by what they've been through?
I mean, the population is highly traumatized, and we are talking about children who have spent months at the hands of horrific criminals. Some girls are raped in the name of forced marriage, and then when they return back to the communities, there is hardly any psychosocial support or mental support that is given to them. We also know that in just one state, Zamfara State, there are about 700,000 internally displaced people, and there is no camp to shelter them. There is no food, there is no medication. And so people are just sleeping on the roadside, in motor garages, in places human beings shouldn't be sleeping, especially in this biting winter. And so you have that. But schools, over 500 schools are right now shut down. In Zamfara, there is no primary school or secondary school that has opened in the last 5 months. But the same thing is the case across other northwestern states where schools have partly been shut down, and in the northeastern part of Nigeria. And so Nigerian children, especially northern Nigerian children, are left behind. when other children across the world and in Nigeria are getting educated.
Yes. Ghulam, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we have run out of time, so we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Thank you so much to all of our guests, Mike Ejiofor, Ghulam Abukarti, and Aliyu Musa. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Mohammed Jamjoum, and the whole team here, bye for now.